You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay was originally aired on December 26th, 1986.
Those of you who subscribe to the idea that a camel is a horse designed by a committee might be willing to agree that this bulbous-nosed, hump-shouldered, dewlap giant of a deer, the moose, is a deer designed by a committee. The moose will win no beauty contest among the world's deer tribe, which include white-tailed deer, wapiti, mule deer, fallow deer, sikhi deer, and that magnificent stag of literature, the red deer of Eurasia. The moose has become relevant to us in central New York because one or two of its number have wandered through the back acres over the last 2 years, even on occasion getting a bit of coverage on local TV. That's what creates a present spate of interest in the moose. But I'd like not to dwell on that facet of the moose, except to say that such incidents are not rare in Europe or Northern Asia, where the moose have been domesticated even to a modest extent. What interests me about the moose is the information that it once roamed almost all of the deciduous forests of North America, and that it is actually one of the few surviving genera of mammals which has come to us only moderately changed from the Pleistocene era, that time of mammoths and saber-toothed cats. That may explain its distribution across the northern portions of both New and the Old World. In the Old World, however, it's called the elk. But the New World moose and the Old World elk are one species. The moose is an extremely powerful animal. It wades with remarkable ease through hock-deep marshlands. If this statement elicits no admiration on your part, put on a pair of hip boots and attempt to follow the route of a moose through a shallow, swaley expanse. The ankle-deep muck alone is enough to slow you down to a stutter step. The moose, on the other hand, moves gracefully along, water and mud a-flying. What most of us know about the moose is how artfully it adorns the sunrise or sunset expanses of a mountain lake. There it stands, its great flat antlers spread above its head and back. Thus, it escapes to some extent the attacks of deer flies and other biting insects. But if we watch it long enough, we'll see that it also has another purpose for wading. The moose has a fondness for water lilies and other submerged aquatic plants, to attain which it willingly submerges its head so that everything, including the antlers, disappears. A more important staple, however, is the twigs and buds of woody plants, in search of which it may actually bulldoze down shrubs or saplings to obtain food that is otherwise beyond its reach. I've often wondered if this phenomenon accounts for the term. The moose is an extreme wanderer and a very strong swimmer, crossing lakes or even marine inlets in its travels. The healthy adult moose is an effective adversary for any of our North American predators. Its size alone would indicate why. A bull moose had been measured at well over 6.5 feet at the shoulders, and records exist of moose approaching a ton in weight, although the average bull would probably be closer to 1,100 pounds. Cow moose normally weigh 600 or 700 pounds. If the moose was planned by a committee, it must be said that the committee planned well, especially if we start with that huge head and massive spreading antlers as a given. Much has been made in the literature of the extreme weight of that extravagant extremity. The antlers alone weigh over 50 pounds, and that's only a portion of the total. Holding it erect requires a powerful musculature, and that explains the hump at the shoulder. The vertebrae of the neck have long dorsal extensions on which to attach those muscles. The lips are prehensile, which means the moose can use them almost like fingers to grasp and gather the foliage of food plants. Since a moose has no upper incisors, it cannot simply grab and snip like a rabbit can. It must get twigs in its mouth, clamp them against the roof of the mouth with its lower incisors, and tear or twist them loose from the plant. This accomplished, the food is moved back to the large grinding cheek teeth where they are prepared for swallowing. An animal which eats hard plant materials needs some similar arrangement because the substance of the plant cell is so difficult to digest. The life cycle of the moose is not unique in the world of deer. It is mainly nocturnal, although it may on occasion come out at any time of the day. It is much more solitary than other deer, and although the bulls do contend for territory, they do not amass a harem. When mating with one cow is completed, the resident bull moves on in search of other mates in its vicinity. The cow carries its normally twin calves for 8 months. Mating occurs in September and October, and therefore young are born in May and June. They grow rapidly, but do not usually mate for 2 or 3 years. Young may stay with the adult cow for nearly 2 years, accounting for most of the sightings of moose in groups. There is enough of interest about the moose to justify a series of programs. Suffice for now to say that the return of the moose to its ancestral habitat in New York State will be welcomed by those who love to view a mountain lake at sunrise or at sunset. That's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.